Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin, and today we have a special guest. We've asked Al Nofi to come in and give us some historical background on the issue that we're going to be talking about today. Since, as Jim always says, sex sells, and we actually do cover some topics on sex in the military occasionally on Strategy Page, and for whatever reason, it's human interest that those are some of our areas. Sometimes those are some of our posts that get the most traffic. We've covered different issues about sexual issues in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places in the military. But this last couple of weeks has brought up General Petraeus and his relationships with his biographer. But Al, I think we'll start with you. There's been a long tradition of generals having affairs throughout history. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. You know, in general, you know, people go away to war and the rules change. And then, of course, if you're a general, it's a lot easier to attract feminine companionship. I mean, the most obvious case in the U.S. is one that's actually dubious, and that's Eisenhower with Kay Summersby, who was his driver during the war. And although there's been all sorts of claims that they were lovers, the best that can be proven is that they had a really close relationship, and some people have actually said it was more like a father-daughter, you know, because she was someone he could talk to and you know, when everybody else around him was looking for promotions and stuff. But other U.S. generals in the Second World War, I mean, Omar Bradley, who certainly seems to be the most innocent person in the universe, frequently went away for the weekend with a whack or two. And several other generals. Douglas MacArthur had a very long relationship with a Philippine actress, which was illegal, actually, beyond the fact that he wasn't married at the time, you know, but she was 16 when he met her. And, you know, had never gotten the papers, despite the fact that for much of that relationship, he was a fairly well-known guy. I mean, he was chief of staff in the army and then, you know, commander in the Philippines. So. And there have been cases, as far as I can tell, there's never been a case in the U.S. where a general relationship with somebody created a problem. In the Civil War, there was a woman named Annie Jones who was working her way through the Union Officer Corps. And for a time, she was with Judson Kilpatrick, I think, who's Anderson Cooper's great-something grandfather. And she, she started out with a General Stale, yeah. And he actually gave her a major's uniform so she could, you know, sneak around. Then she moved over to Judson Kilpatrick, and then George Custer got hold of her. The problem there was that Custer was a brigadier general, and Kilpatrick was a major general and also his commanding officer, so that sort of hit the fan, and Kilpatrick got really annoyed and charged her with espionage. And it ended up that Lincoln actually had this woman released from jail and brought to the White House so that he could interview her. And on his orders, she was subsequently set free because he realized that she was just, you know, an airhead who liked hanging around with generals. There have been some situations that were a little underhanded, though. There was one U.S. general, and I cannot at the moment think of his name, who he started a relationship with this woman. She was Austrian. She's an actress, I think. And she helped him make off with a huge amount of loot. He was a division commander in the ETO. Now, he was married. So he married her to one of his aides, so that got her to be an American citizen. Then he actually got her a commission in the WAX or something. And when they got redeployed back to the Harry J. Collins, that's the name I was looking for, when they got returned to the U.S., he got divorced from his wife. She got divorced from her husband, his aide. And they lived happily ever after, spending all this money they made from loot. He actually was believed to have even stolen money from Holocaust, survivor possessions. The big thing, I think, is that all of these people knew what was going on. And there was a tacit agreement in the press, not to discuss this sort of stuff. And I'm sure that J. Edgar knew about it among the folks who were here in the U.S. You get a problem when people don't know what's going on. And, of course, you have on top of that, in the case of the U.S., our puritanical attitude towards these things. There was if you don't know what's going on, then the possibility of blackmail and espionage is there. If you do know what's going on, tell the guy to keep it, to be discreet, and he can usually get away with it. What do you think, Austin?
Well, I think several things, Al, about the, you're asking me about the historical situation on this,
in
terms of whether someone can be blackmailed and compromised. It happens. It certainly has happened. That's one of the reasons to bring it to an operational level, that you have such a careful and pragmatic approach to the kinds of investigations that go with higher level clearances. Where you're asked, and investigators are required to ask, and the individuals who are being investigated to receive the clearances, tell them what's happened, where you are, what you've done, and the investigators say, we're going to find, if we don't find something exactly, we'll find an indication, because of the broad net they try to cast when they're looking and they're giving the higher level clearances, top secrets and above with the signifiers. These kind of situations are specifically, and I'm meaning the Petraeus affair, are addressed. Tell us. We need to know, especially if you're dealing with certain types of highly sensitive, they use the term, you'll see this as an open source term, compartmentalized information. Now, just to bring in, since we are talking, Dan and Jim said about sex, or since sex sells, as Dunnigan says, think back to another historical point on this, the number of gay men who were in associated with British espionage in World War II since then, that was a subject at the time of a potential blackmail. Mm-hmm. And it was a concern. I will say that what I have been told secondhand on this, that if it was known and you were in a critical function, no matter what the quote-unquote social context was at the time, just want to know, then you can't be blackmailed. And we know that. And I use that just as one, as another example. More deeper concerns, frankly, Al, and I know this is not on topic here, though, are on drug abuse and alcohol abuse and debts, gambling as an example, because that moves the person into an even more vulnerable situation to the bribe, instead of blackmail. But that's And then I'm again thinking of situations that occurred in the Cold War. There several come to mind. They all have that component of the enemy intelligence service wanting to blackmail someone because of personal personal information. Now, the general, another response to the history you were saying, Al, there are, and you know, I was just, this is the problem with the strategy talk, doing it off the top of our heads. I had the name and I just lost it, but that famous book on the generals of the British and American generals in all of their affairs. That it was a bestseller, I want to say, 20 years ago. It goes into, as you mentioned, Bradley, Patton, and several of the higher-ranking British generals as well. And it was well known. These guys even bragged about it among themselves. Kind of a different situation at war than back in the back in the nation's capital. So this is, I would say that it's, this isn't new. This is has been going on since time immemorial, and you've just got the in the issue of here's a way to add another frame that we might pick up on later. There is a responsibility issue, extraordinary responsibility issue, and in a world of 24/7 media, scrutiny increases the higher one rises and the more responsibility one takes. And where in World War II, George Patton and Omar Bradley and several hundred others, it was, you know, you had a something of a press shield around you. That press shield doesn't exist now. But take it out of sex. I'm sorry, Jim. I'm going to go someplace. There is no sex this time. General McChrystal's wisecrack to the Rolling Stone reporter about Vice President Biden when he said, "You mean Joe, bite me?" Come on, fellas. We know that is a wisecrack. McChrystal is a tough, genuinely tough individual. That's the way his personality is. That was something that should not have been quoted, but Rolling, don't say it in front of Rolling Stone. You might want to say it in front of some other of reporters that are there to get a different kind of story. You don't say it. And where even 30 years ago you could have said it, now it's going to be published. And it's going to end up on the Internet. It's going to go viral. There's something where a wisecrack, of course, it had ramifications because he's a four-star general. And in the U.S. Constitution, hey, folks, we have civilian control over the military. You don't do that. And he got burned. He got burned for it. The same thing as higher levels of scrutiny. Maybe 100 years ago, the Secretary of Defense or War, Secretary of War, of course, and Secretary of the Navy could have had their affairs in Washington, and no one would have said anything. But now, with the intense competition, just on not only on cable TV, but from a local blogger's got international access, the level of scrutiny is intense. There's also the email trail, and I say this with cheekily, if someone ever tracked the emails that Al Nofi and I exchange sometimes, it would be, it's funny, it's a chuckle, but there's some of the things that Al and I have said to one another, if you took it out of context, it could be, does Austin really think this? Does Al really think this? No, we're kidding. And we all know, everyone does that.
But anyone that's been involved in a lawsuit, as I have been within the last 5 years with email and like that, when something's read out in court that you said as a joke,
miserable.
It comes across miserable. A lot different.
And the only reason I'm bringing it up with Al, because it's somewhat amused Al, but he knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no concerns whatsoever about any of the stuff when we kid around and do things. But imagine, just imagine if it came up and said, Austin Bay, did you really write this to Dr. A.A. Novi? Oh, you mean, did I write that to Al? Yes, I did. And, well, my goodness, and, you know, the petty waste reaction is like, how could you have said that? Take a look at this train of emails, which we get. I haven't seen them, but they're already a scandal, Dan. And that is part, it's like the Facebook exhibitionism that so many young people have already gone through, and then it's cost them jobs.
Right.
And some ways, anyway, I'll get off on this. Al, I think I've kind of brought the history thing back up to the present with that. So.
Yeah. I think the big one is there used to be a consensus that, you know, as long as nobody's getting hurt, you know, it's his private business between him and his family, you know. But now that it gets out there because it sells, it doesn't matter. I mean, we've had, you know, Lincoln was gay. Lincoln had a girlfriend, that sort of thing. And he's been dead for 150 years. And it manages to make the papers. So imagine, you know, some guy who's around living and some of these folks get hold of something. And the molehill emerges, you know, and becomes the mountain, you know.
Now, Jim, one of the things that has been mentioned in the papers and is that there may be a uniform military code of justice issue with Broadwell and Petraeus because they were both officers. What are they talking about when they bring that issue up?
Well, they're talking about the honeypot problem. It's a classic espionage technique to unleash female operatives on, you know, senior officials, enemy officials, especially military ones. Because these guys have a ancient, you know, tradition of saying the wrong thing in bed. And it's also a problem even when the woman and the man are both, you know, on our side, as it were. But as Austin, you know, was discussing, there has been a growing problem with classified information that isn't classified being sloppily, you know, administered. So it's all over the place. For example, I've heard from more than one person, you know, within the Beltway, that one of the things they use strategy page for is if they want to go public with some classified information, they go search strategy page to see if we've discussed it yet. Now, they can also go search the internet and probably find, you know, somewhere somebody has basically discussed this. But, but we have a little, you know, cachet. You know, you're less likely to be indicted, if you go with it, you know, that's been discussed on strategy base. Now, we're very careful, you know, to not violate operational security and, you know, and I deleted a lot and, you know, shredded a lot of information that's come in, because, you know, it was either obviously classified or I checked around and found out it most probably was classified. But a lot of the so-called classified information is already out there. And the internet has made it much easier to find it. I mean, we got some early on after the Iraq invasion, we got, nasty grams from people in the Pentagon. You saw some of those, saying, oh, you must take this down. Now, in a couple of cases, I did. But I also shot back to the guy. By the way, you can find this up on this Russian site. Good luck with that. And this was very common because we put something up, and a lot of it, you know, pops up, you know, on Russian sites. Now, we don't usually normally pick them except because they translate them into Russian, or it's basically a Russian language site where enough people can speak English, they just post our stuff, you know, in English, and for some reason it isn't indexed. So it doesn't pop up, you know, with an internet search. I won't go into what's going on there. But the fact of the matter is that there are far fewer secrets than the people that running this classification programs believe. Now, back to the sex angle. There's a feeding frenzy on this because there's been a fundamental change in the United States regarding sex and celebrities, shall we say, or, you know, notable people in the last 50 years. Now, why do we know this? Because we're old farts, and we remember what it was like when we were kids. You know, things certain just didn't appear in the newspapers. But for those of us who were connected, and I was, I had, you know, friends, you know, and what have you, who were in fairly high-level politics, local and, in one case, national. And I get some of the stories coming back, just the kids sitting around, you know, growing up in a saloon, you pick up stuff. There was a lot of hanky-panky going on. So when it came out that JFK and Marilyn Monroe were making whoopee in the White House when Jacqueline was away, no surprise. Well, you know, what do you know? What's going on? But it's gotten worse and worse over every decade since then, to the point where in the 90s, and we've mentioned this many times in Strategy Page, the military basically said, hey, if you're going overseas into what we call a combat zone, you're a monk. No booze, no sex, no nothing. Thank God we got video games, otherwise they'd probably have mutinies on their hands. Now, people could get a hold of booze, they could get a hold of nookie, but it was very difficult, and if you got caught, you were court-martialed. You could be court-martialed, because as the stories keep coming back, more and more guys are saying, screw it, I'll risk the, you know, losing my job, getting court-martialed or whatever. The locals, especially in Afghanistan, you know, say, hey, the troops want to get laid, they want to get high, we'll help them. I mean, what do you expect in the country that produces 95% of the world's heroin? And some of the best, you know, hashish on the planet. But the fact of the matter is, it's literally against the rules. It's illegal, you know, to have sex or to get high with any kind of, you know, alcohol or any kind of, you know, substance in an American combat. Now, that had never happened before. In fact, that is unique in military history. Our NATO allies, you know, have you know, look at this, are incredulous. How can they possibly do this? And, of course, our guys love to go visit the French or the British base and whatnot, where they can get a drink. They might have, you know, even the our NATO allies realize it's you got to be careful going after the local women in a place like Afghanistan. For example, in Turkey, which is a Muslim country, the air bases that NATO used were out in the countryside for the most part. And for years I've been hearing from people the worst thing that happened to you in the Air Force was to get stationed at one of those bases because you were surrounded by Islamic conservatives, not terrorists. I mean, they were pro-American, but you couldn't even look at the women. And you couldn't go downtown. Well, you could go down in some of the towns to get a drink, but basically the place was largely dry. But now, of course, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, you know, the Horn of Africa, all those places, they're not the kind of places where you can party. But the problem isn't that, you know, that you couldn't, you know, basically get a drink or get some loving, as it were, in those parts of the world. Soldiers have been doing just that for centuries. 19th century, you know, the British, there are still stories about, you know, how British troops, you know, made out, as it were, in places like Egypt or Sudan, you know, and throughout the Muslim world where they were. But nowadays, it's literally illegal, and our culture as a whole, at least for the, you know, the upper classes, as it were, has made it a death sentence, you know, career-wise, if you're caught. Now, in the past, as Al pointed out, you know, for all of American history, it was understood that a wealthy, powerful man, especially in some women in some cases, would basically get all the sex they wanted. They just do it discreetly. I mean, you know, it's been said many times that power is a wonderful aphrodisiac, not just for the man or woman who has it, but for people around him. They say, hey, he's the big cheese. Let's jump in the bed with him. Even if you're not into it, and I've heard this from some people on Wall Street where, you know, we have more vamps per square, you know, mile, than any probably other place on the planet because there's a lot of money down here and that attracts, that basically gets the hormones running. even if you're not interested, you're going to get hit on. And that's the case with powerful and famous. If you are famous, you are basically an aphrodisiac for a lot of people. People will get excited by that. In many ways, they will get excited. And although we accept that aspect of it, we condemn anybody, I mean, at least media. I mean, this is basically a social thing, which, again, has changed in 50 years a lot. We basically make a big game out of condemning somebody who has done something we would all like to do if we had the chance, which I guess is part of the fun. So it's become this huge spectator sport, forbidden fruit, and apparently the main problem with it is we're not getting any. I mean, there was a famous joke in the 1960s, I'll never forget, and that the way it went was, you know, a reporter was down in Texas, you know, picking up some local color, and he found this old cowboy, and he says, you know, he's doing a culture clash story, he says, hey, what do you think about all these young kids now in this sex, drugs, and rock and roll? And he says, I got three things to say about it. It's against the law of God, it's against the law of man, and I ain't getting out of it. And this is basically what we turn into a cultural icon. You condemn it, but you say, gee whiz, if only.
Well, you know? we're definitely turned into a culture of voyeurism, that's for sure.
Well, that's the same thing, you know, gee whiz, you know, if I can't have it, I'll take it away from you.
Yeah. There's another element to, in terms of the overall armed forces approach to relations between the sexes. For example, so-called fraternization between officers and enlisted personnel. Well, 60-something percent of Americans meet their spouse on the job. I mean, if you haven't gotten married right out of college, then you're probably going to meet whoever you marry where you work. Well, if you're in the armed forces, where you work has these rigid rules of, you know, behavior. And it creates problems because they're, well, I mean, I've actually known officers who were married to enlisted personnel, and they were very cautious about their career and whatnot. And eventually one of them would leave the service because it was difficult to continue to maintain the relationship secret. But they could do it for a long time because some people were willing to say, what the hell is this? They're fine together. It's, you know, it's not interfering in the professional development or the service in any way. And this is a similar aspect of that. You know, you can't drink, you can't gamble, you can't do this, you can't do the other thing. And eventually we're going to have to address it because more and more people, as the armed forces become smaller and more professional and more integrated in terms of women, are going to have this continuing problem.
Right.
Now, yeah, your problem in the military with fraternizing, it got so ridiculous that a few years ago we had this in strategy page. They had to pass a special, you know, exemption to the general orders about fraternization, so married couples who were stationed in the same area could legally fraternize, so to speak.
Well, and happened a number of times. I mean, I'm aware of it anecdotally, and I remember the reports when that order or whatever, however it was handled, command information that put that out. But it's happened for the reason that Al just described, of the number of couples, married couples, they're both in the service, and there's the overwhelming number of instances that I personally know of people that meet and get married and the like. To say that one person retires and the other doesn't, you're dealing now, because of a professional military, with people that have been in 6, 7, 8, 9 years, and they're both committed to doing at least 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has to be this accommodation, and at some level, despite no fraternization between officers and enlisted, there have been a number of cases where, guess what? We're getting married. And I'll give you one, and I will try to disguise it, but you'll get my point on this. Senior non-commissioned officer with a combat record par excellence of, meaning E7 and above, divorced for almost 20 years, marries a female lieutenant colonel. Well, they had known each other for a decade, and they do it, and in his case, because he's already over 20, he says, I'm going to retire and do it. But the point that he says is that I've got that option. Other people don't. And he was going to be, he said, and I'm going to promote my new wife's career. I happened to know this fellow and talked to him at length about it. I knew him, didn't know his wife, met her. And there's the, there's a case, this is an example of two people that you definitely want in a career, and one of them already had a career. He's completed it. And then his wife had been selected for a farm job. You definitely wanted to keep her on this. So these accommodations go on, but it comes back as how do you meet somebody? And the restrictive rules, they're contradictory. And they're contradictory because you get into the real world situation, everybody knows you meet somebody on the job. You don't want it to be disruptive, and you don't want it to be abusive. You don't want it to be abusive. But there's a lot of judgment calls in there, and to get back to the 24/7 media and the intense scrutiny, is if there is the backdoor morale issue, and it's not that, you know, your reputation's tarnished because you quote-unquote had an affair, but wait a minute, I can't talk to this person I work with whom I find attractive off-duty? Now, wait a second, especially when you're dealing with people in their early 20s, mid-20s, late 20s, early 30s. You've got a social environment and a sexual reality environment that's not accommodated by the regs. And yet it is the result of a professional service. Now, this isn't addressing, and I apologize, Jim, it's not addressing the salacious aspects of Petraeus and Lieutenant Colonel Broadwell on this, but those are some of the parameters, and Jim was talking about them, Al too, about how silly some of it is, and ultimately, silly, is that the right word? It's good as any other.
Silly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I do want to bring it back to Lieutenant Colonel Broadwell specifically here at the end of the discussion, because
I decided to bring it back to Colonel Broadwell since I knew we were supposed to talk about it. So.
Right. Is that she may be the one that is in the most serious trouble here. Petraeus, his career was at an end. Who knows how many more years he could have had at the CIA. Maybe, you know, less than a handful, but she was still in the reserves. She was apparently a military intelligence from what we can pick up. She says she said in public that she's an intelligence officer. Now, as we all know, that can mean a lot of different things. But with FBI having gone into her home and supposedly found classified documents like that, also with her possibly, if she had been active when the affair took place, there are all sorts of ramifications for her. Is that right, Al?
Yeah. It's likely a career blighting event, permanent. The business about classified documents at home is a little tricky because there are so many documents that are classified, many of which shouldn't be. And when you have a pile of paperwork on your desk and you're going to take some stuff home to read, it's really easy to pick up something and realize that you shouldn't have it. Or not realize that you shouldn't have it. And I'm sure lots of folks, not just in military, but in business, for example, there's plenty of documents that are confidential within firms and whatnot, would find it very easy to tell stories about that. Oh, yeah, I did this by mistake, you know. So that's one.
Yeah, I know when I was doing more work for the Pentagon, they'd want to show me some stuff, but it was classified at whatever level, and I, you know, couldn't be taken out of the building. And I wasn't going to spend all weekend there just going through this stuff. I just, you know, hey, if I could take it out and, you know, do it on the train back to New York, whatever, I could take care of it. But I'm sorry, guys. Can't help you. Now, in some cases, won't name names. Hopefully there's a statute of limitations for this. I would just slip a copy and say, hey, look, you know, do what you can and, you know, let us know. That's one reason why the CIA, for example, has been declassifying a lot of older material, because they want to get more opinions from, you know, experts, as it were, without having to jump through all the hoops involved with, you know, having outsiders look at classified information. It's a huge problem. So, I mean, basically the pressure to declassify is coming from both ends, you know, not just the public, but also people on the inside who basically know. The Internet is a big part of this. The Internet has shown the insiders, what a lot of the insiders have known for a long time, that more eyes on a problem, the easier a solution is going to come. Now, we're talking about friendly eyes, and they're seeing this more and more every day. But a lot of information, a lot of stuff they can't get an opinion on because it's classified. So this, again, this doesn't get much attention in the media, but this is where a huge, you know, push for declassification is coming from. And
now,
so,
Austin,
you know, Colonel Broadwell is probably going to get hung on that because the media doesn't like little subtleties like, you know, I just, you know, discussed nailing a female, you know, colonel, you know, to the wall is just too good a headline.
Right, right. And yeah, so she's possibly going to be the fall guy or the
sacrificial lamb.
Right.
Okay, Dan, you were going to ask me a wind-up question?
I was going to ask you a wind-up question. What about General Allen and what's going down in Tampa? How does that whole situation happen? Are there these – see, I don't rub shoulders with generals and like that. Most of the time I'm rubbing shoulders with, you know, captains and majors and the occasional Colonel Austin. Bay, but the thing is, are there women like Jill Kelly that are throughout the military that host parties at these bases and like that? Is that just a typical thing?
You know, I'm really not in a position to comment on that particular scandal, Dan. As you all know, I write a global gossip column that's just filled with salacious tidbits, and I really. I don't know, and it's interesting. Let me reframe the question, all right? Do headquarters have some, especially higher-level headquarters, have something of a party circuit? And the answer is yes, but the specifics of what goes on with the MacDill Tampa Bay area, I have no knowledge of whatsoever. Do they? And I'll toss one out that I've heard Al expand upon, and we'll bring George Patton into this. Patton had money, and his wife's family had more money, and they were Mr. and Mrs. Patton were famous for the parties they gave wherever the Pattons were stationed. And he part of it was is that Lieutenant Colonel, and then General Patton didn't need the paycheck. He did not need the paycheck. He had inherited wealth and was and he threw the parties. George was a one man party circuit. That is replicated. Sociability within any kind of group can enhance professional performance. We know that. So the downside of it is you have someone who is, for whatever reason, and I cannot speak to the specifics. I'm not speaking to the specific. I'm speaking in a general fashion. I don't mean general officer. I mean, you know, the roundabout here is that a host or hostess could have another agenda. That's gone on since time immemorial, where the host or hostess is a spy for an enemy, enemy government. That's an old ruse. This is also why it is counter-intel people pay attention to it. What I suspect, and I actually, this is a suspicion, we've seen this played out before, is that the knowledgeable individual, now the comments show up on Facebook. And where the individual thought he was speaking or she was speaking to a group of friends and giving a party, next thing you know, it's all over. An example of that in the recent election, Mitt Romney's comment to a donor about the percentage of people who depend upon government entitlements in the U.S. as a, what did Romney think of that? And someone had a handheld audio recording device, and Romney said, well, it's the 47% one. And it was a comment that, you know, he had reframed. He's actually got an interesting subject to address, but it was used as a quip to damage him. That happens all the time in a party-type atmosphere. You have a cocktail party conversation. And now even that is not sacrosanct. So I've given you a background pastiche of an answer, Dan. In part, I don't know about that, and I stress that again for our listeners. I do not know all those elements of this quote-unquote scandal. I'm not sure that there is a scandal, frankly. But all of these elements are constantly at play in human socializing. Now you've got the digital recording capability in a button on your shirt, and the next thing you know, it's on the web. And so said, he said, she said, they said, it said, and you have a scandal. How do we deal with this? We've got a generation already dealing with the fact they got drunk at a beer bust and put it up on Facebook, and then they couldn't get a job at an insurance agency. I'm speaking right there. That's happened. We're seeing in these scandals, and this is probably a good way to end the strategy talk today, we're seeing in these scandals that effect of constant, insistent, and very detailed media.
Right. And I guess the interesting thing is, and we're never going to hear about this, you know, we're hearing about what the FBI is doing and like that, but how counterintelligence, it would be interesting to have a talk one day, is how counterintelligence is dealing with the new social media.
Well, when counterintelligence gets hold of Al Nofi and Austin Bay's emails over the last, you know, 25 years, they'll have a lot of fun with that one. So
that's right. All right, well, we'll wrap it up there, and I'm sure we'll, Jim, that we'll be talking about sex for a long time on Strategy Page, won't we?
Thank God.
All right. We'll see y'all. Bye.